It's Power Hour LSU.
Let's go, LSU. It is game week. Lock in. I'm looking at you. We are not going to let a running quarterback run all over us. Sellers is one of the best runners I have ever seen, and I'm a film analyst. I don't claim to be Brian Baldinger or Tom Brady on the Telestrator, but I'm telling you right now, Lenore Sellers will literally not only put his own team on his back. If we're not careful, he could put our own defenders on his back, and that is a big problem because, as many of you know, LSU needs to be ready for it. And it was interesting that the voice of college football, you can argue all you want who your favorite national commentator is, but the guy who has been hotter than fish grease this past year has been Josh Pate. And Josh Pate sent out a somewhat cryptic but very interesting tweet. You see it in the thumbnail image that LSU and Texas are going to look good, improved this weekend. Now, is he referencing some information that he might know that the general public does not know? Maybe so. But I do think after this bye week, it would be very negligent if LSU did not at least think about switching up a few things before they take on South Carolina this weekend, in particular on the offensive side of the football. So there are times when you get information, and I share it sometimes publicly, but I will do so in our Discord. Once again, patreon.com/LSU football. I will never claim to be an LSU insider, but you know, when you do this for as long as I have, you do get some intel. And I shared this last week that do not be shocked if you see Carius Kern actually play some guard this next Saturday, which very well could be the case. I am really high on Carius Kern. I do believe guard is his best position. I could also see him still play some offensive tackle. I could also see him not start at all. But what I would like LSU to do is to seriously evaluate everyone on this offensive line. And maybe you do need to rotate the offensive line a little bit more than one would think. So, very interesting. I will say this. Without a shadow of a doubt, LSU needs to put out something offensively on Saturday that is reasonable. Versus Ole Miss, that was not reasonable. Nothing was working. Couldn't hit a deep pass. Couldn't make a simple block. Couldn't get first downs. When you did have some things go right offensively, it was ugly. When you had a deep pass, it was an underthrow. When you had a huge gain of yards, it was more so because of a penalty than something that you did. You missed blocks. You had guys that couldn't even stay on your feet. Damn it, just give me something reasonable. And the one thing that people need to remember is that as ugly as LSU has looked, you are 9.5-point favorites. 9.5-point favorites. Y'all, LSU has struggled to score more than 10 points at times this year. Lenore Sellers is a really good quarterback. It seems a little trappish. It seems as if everybody this week is going to tell you to take South Carolina, the same way that everyone told you that the sharp play a few weeks ago in Tiger Stadium, the Florida Gators covering the spread. So whatever the people out West think about this game, the total opened up at 41.5. It's now up to 44. 41.5 was cartoonishly low. I said, go take the over. Now it's creeping up. I do think the LSU offense will look a little bit better. You have 2 weeks, to find something offensively that you feel really good about. Now, the next thing. I also want LSU to go into this game knowing that they have Tiger Stadium at their back. Lenore Sellers is a lot better at home than he is on the road. And I do think crowd noise and environment can get to him. He does have a tendency to take bad sacks. Also, LSU, while they have struggled themselves to get sacks, what they do to get home versus quarterbacks is blitz. We're not a good traditional rush team. But with the way that LSU blitzes, you're going to have faster defensive backs going back there to hopefully bring down Lenore Sellers. And those are guys that can actually run him down if he were to actually break the initial contain. So I'm really excited to see how this battle's going to work out. I do believe LSU defensively, though, will come out with a vengeance. And I do think one good thing that happened in the loss versus Ole Miss is that the quarterback was able to run some. We have not faced someone that could actually hurt us with their legs since week one. Then when we got to week five, it wasn't the biggest thing that held us back defensively, but Trinidad Chambliss was able to run for some first downs. And some of those first downs that he ran for were wide open quarterback rush lanes. So this will give LSU a chance to figure out why were those lanes that wide open. Another thing, one thing that really hurt us versus South Carolina, with Lenora Sellers being a really good reader of the run game, it is so important to not make those reads easy. He is a bit of a one-read quarterback. Processing isn't his strong suit. If you make things muddy for him, you will have success. The problem with the game plan last year wasn't just Sellers running. Every quarterback ran on us that had some type of speed and mobility. The issue were the run fits. We allowed Raheem Rocket Sanders wide gaping holes to run through because we were occupying the same gap. We were shooting different gaps. We were playing aggressively and recklessly, and it ended up hurting us. We must stay in our gaps. And what happened versus Ole Miss, there were times where we were calling run stunts, and we would outrun the gap, and it would open up wide lanes for Lacy to run through. And we had that issue last year. It's been a little bit better this year. We have got to make sure we do not let the South Carolina running backs, led by number one, Uno, their transfer, just run all over us. We've got to be ready for it. Now, the next thing, this is a national college football story. We do have a new transfer portal window in college football, okay? It is so important to let all of this play out because this is brand new. Now, what I want to do is bring up something that we are going to talk more about tomorrow. So I am not a believer in the single transfer portal window. It's not what I would do. I still think there needs to be two transfer portal windows. I don't want to get too deep into why I feel that way, but we are moving to a single transfer portal window. So this is it via Ross Dellinger, one of our favorite reporters here, Yahoo Sports. Players whose head coaches have departed get a 15-day portal period 5 days after a new coach is hired. Very interesting. But it's now official. The transfer portal window is January 2nd to January 16th. And that is effective immediately. What I don't like about that is that it devalues spring football even more. One of the big values of actually having spring practice is you're able to have an up-close look at your roster, your early enrollees, all those different things, and you are able to decide, hey, we need to get this settled. We need to go get this guy or that guy. And look, we were one of the biggest winners in the spring transfer portal window. We got A.J. Halsey, who's been our best player. And then we also got a really nice player in Bernard Gooden. Now, Halsey or Delane, you can argue either one, but you get the point. We would not be a good football team right now if we did not have A.J. Halsey. We just would not be that good. Ole Miss would have blown us out. So it's very important to keep that in mind because, God bless, I am so pro transfer portal window in spring. Because now, yeah, the transfer portal window from January 2nd to January 16th, there's some very important things happening during that time period where college football playoff games are still going on. Imagine you are playing for the national championship game, and the championship game this year, I believe, is on the 19th of January, and you, as a team, have to also manage your roster for the next year. So what I don't get, and I understand it's academic calendar reasons, why can't you just move the transfer portal window to February and bring back signing day festivities and all of it? I understand I have gray hair now, and I try not to do what happened in the good old days type of content, but what I would tell you is in the good old days, the Bayou Bash was the funnest thing involving LSU football. I'm serious. Bayou Bash on Tuesdays, they were that epic. They really, really, really were. Okay, so coming up, we'll have Preston Guy join us. I'll be on Blake Ruffino's show a little bit later tonight. And of course, please like, subscribe, share. Beside a Nurse Court, Sibley, AP, Cheetah, Jamie, Christopher, Sibley. Let's contain Sellers because he will be the best football player on the field. Contain him and don't let him run over us and Tigers when he ran wild last year. Okay. We're 13 minutes into the show today. And I wanted to wait to talk about Garrett Nussmeier and the Garrett Nussmeier versus the Michael Van Buren battle. Now, it's not really a battle. I think if Garrett's healthy, he's going to play. Or whether he's healthy, there's a definition of healthy, as in, is he 100% healthy, ready to go, better than what he was versus Ole Miss? I know there's speculation if he's hurt at all. But I will tell you this. I do think it'll be I'll save my guess for tomorrow on who the starting quarterback is going to be. But what I would tell you is what Brian Kelly said about Michael Van Buren was interesting. He said, it feels like he's starting to have a starter's mentality, which is a paraphrase of his exact quote from yesterday, that he is indeed starting to play and command things better. So hopefully that is the case. I do believe there will be discussions if Garrett is wincing yet again and not fully stepping into vertical throws, that at halftime you could see a switch. And it's plausible. It is very plausible. Okay? I will tell you this, Alexander. We do not know this. We do not. Nurse Court, good to see you. Chance is in here. I love Bayou Bash. Oh, man, I loved it, too. I loved it, too. Now, next thing. Huge recruiting weekend. This weekend in Tiger Stadium. I understand it's not as important as it once was because of the transfer portal, especially with how we feel about this roster being mostly a transfer portal mercenary team, which it is. To me, high school recruiting is still important. Whit Weeks was one of our high school recruits. Caden Durham was one of our high school recruits. Now, we would have liked that year two, year three crop to be better. Obviously, Durham is a year two, and Whit Weeks is a year three. But you still need to recruit. And obviously, Lamar Brown is a big name that will be in Tiger Stadium, but there will be a host of other Tigers. And look, with the new transfer portal windows being the way that they are now, high school evaluation to me becomes more powerful, more important, because you better have a good idea of what is strong and what is weak on your roster by the time January 16th rolls around, which is the final day of the transfer portal window. You better have a good idea of which high school recruits can help you in year one. Now, how many high school recruits are helping this current team in year one? Well, the 3 5 stars are the biggest. Now, you've had a few others. Walter Mathis, somewhat surprisingly, has played a whole heck of a lot. He's played well. The Ole Miss game was rough, but that's what is normal for a true freshman in his first real road game. But for me, the high school recruiting is still important. It's not as important. But landing these 5 stars can really move the needle. So it's important that we get these guys on campus and we get them committed, okay? Solomon Thomas was a 5-star, says Alexander. It just depends on which service you look at. But the three elite guys were Kern, Pickett, and Barry. Okay? Let's get to a few more comments before I get to my next point. Austin's back. He copy and pasted his comment like 20 times here. How has the offense gotten so much criticism, but Frank Wilson is spotless? Not a coincidence. All our running backs are under 6 foot, less than 200-ish. Doesn't fix the run game, but where are the short yardage running backs? Yes, I will happily discuss this. This is something I've discussed privately as well with some people that I do trust as far as the running back market is concerned. I think the biggest mistake that Frank made was not getting a transfer portal running back. Now, that's not just him. We spent a lot of money in the portal, but I would have gotten someone. Now, you know, we all would have preferred it be Ahmad Hardy with him being in the state of Louisiana, but he went to ULM and obviously he's with Missouri and he's been one of the best players in all of college football. But let's start with the first thing. Caleb Jackson is just disappointed. There's a lot of different reasons as to why. He was the big back. He was the guy that went out there and dominated practices. And he dominated quite a few of them. Some open scrimmages where my phone was blowing up. Caleb Jackson's taking this biatch over. And for me, that meant LSU was like, okay, he's knocking on the door. And then he had some big plays as a true freshman. Those Wisconsin receptions were something. And physically, he was special. He had ridiculous athleticism. He should have had a kickoff return for a touchdown his freshman season had it not been for Sage Ryan tackling him, which sounds like it's wrong, but that is what happened. So his true freshman season was really good, and then he fell off a cliff. And the vision was a problem. Vision has been a problem for our running backs, while at the same time, your vision becomes even more important when the runs that are there for the taking aren't there for long, or they're inconsistently there. A lot of times, the holes aren't there. So, as is the case with any running back is the single most scheme-dependent position in all of football on the offensive side. So our scheme hasn't been good. The blocking hasn't been good. The game plans haven't been good. The rotation hasn't been good. Part of why our most effective running back, being a wide receiver, of course, that being Xavion Thomas, part of that working is because it is exotic. You don't really see wide receivers take direct, not direct handoffs, but handoffs from the running back the way that Xavion has taken them. And that's been one of the effective runs that we've actually had. You look at some of the other runs that we've had for big gains, it's required some really special plays from non-offensive linemen, right? So go to the first big run of the season. Caden Durham had to break a ridiculous tackle, stay on his feet, and then bounce it to the outside. The best run Xavion had this year versus Clemson. We couldn't block Peter Woods. Thompson got bullied. And then it was Caleb Jackson who stepped up and made the big block. So it's not been a pretty sight for the run blocking ahead of them. And that's what, if Frank could speak honestly, he would probably tell you that as well. Also, off the field stuff has hampered this room with Trey Holly not being there and JT Lindsey not being there. So you lose two other potential players that could have taken carries. And then Harlan Berry is slowly coming along. He was really good in the Ole Miss game when given the opportunities. But he, of course, isn't that big of a guy. And historically, this is just something you can do. We've done a deep dive. We did a whole running back week, I think, two off seasons ago. If you were to go through and look at the running back classes and you were to compare the two running backs, in each of those classes, the one that always performs better is the thicker running back. You can go look for it yourself. Thicker running backs tend to be the better running backs. I've always said SEC is a force equals mass times acceleration league. When you look at our best backs, sure, some of them weren't big. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, of course, is the big example of that. But most of them were big, okay? A lot of the best Alabama running backs, they were thick, big dudes, okay? Both of them that won Heisman were big dudes, okay? Some of the Georgia running backs, which you can make a case that Georgia has actually had the best running backs of this modern era, if you will, they aren't the heaviest guys, but they're thick. They're a solid 200 to 205. And our running back room is small. It is not a big room. It is not a big room. That doesn't mean it can't be good. You can survive with smaller backs, but something else that could be discussed, and we brought it up this offseason, is that all the LSU skill position, they've all gotten smaller. This is the smallest wide receiver room we've probably had. This is one of the lighter, non-traditional tight end rooms we've had. This is one of the smaller quarterback rooms we've had. This is one of the smaller running back rooms that we've had. And we all those guys have a lot of speed. We're one of the faster groups at all those positions and probably all of college football. But are we lacking some thickness? You guys know. If I have to say it again, you can even buy a t-shirt. I have a thickness t-shirt. I like my football players thick. So it would have been nice for us to go out there and get an experienced, older running back, old enough to go buy a cerveza, and just have that experience in our room. Okay? Let's go to Anna Boy. Do y'all like the comments on the screen? I'll take them off. There we go. Start carries current at left guard. He's a big mauler. Too many pass-blocking offensive linemen. Paul Mbenga gets knocked back constantly. Okay, let's talk about Paul Mbenga. But to follow up really quickly on the Frank Wilson thing, I'm willing to give him a pass because he's mostly been like an all-time great running back coach, an all-time great recruiter. We wouldn't be the program we were today without him. So you do, even though it's been a disappointing year for this room, in particular with him, you do give him a longer leash, if you will. And I still think Frank's got it. I still do. And I also say this because I sat with Frank's family at the SEC championship game. Sweet people. Let's see, what was the next comment? Okay, let's talk about Paul Mbenga really quickly. You know, I say this about everyone. I don't like being critical of players. Anyone in the LSU media, if they have a heart, they don't like it either. They don't. But sometimes you have to be. And when I'm critical of a player, understand that it's not just the player I'm criticizing. I'm criticizing the entire situation. Now, here's the problem with Paul Mbenga, and it's big, is that LSU has tried other options at left guard. They trained Cohen Echols, and they've given him opportunities, and he's been worse. To me, he's been worse. And now you're in a position at left guard where, you know, there was a plan that DJ Chester would be the left guard when Braylon Moore came in. There's a lot of different things you could point to about how the offensive line was developed all the way back in spring, when in spring you were playing so many offensive linemen that aren't even close to playing. So it feels as if those reps where chemistry could be developed were wasted for what exactly? Portal politics? I don't know. That doesn't make a lot of sense. That doesn't make a lot of sense at all. And you have no reason to do it now anymore because the portal window is gone. So yeah, Paul Mbenga, it's not been good. I do think LSU is open to moving some pieces around, maybe a new left guard. But then again, if you take Carius Kern from right tackle, you move him to left guard, do you want to go through the Weston Davis experiment again? Or do you want to do something even more radical, move Josh Thompson to right tackle, and then put Carius Kern at right guard, and then go from there? Do you want to get that experimental? I believe they should at least try. Okay, coming up next, one of my favorite ghosts. Guest on the planet Earth.
Power Hour Network listeners and viewers, you might be consuming this content with that crick in your back that you've been trying to get rid of for so long. Take this as your sign today to book your appointment with LaBoardTherapy.com. In the Lafayette region, there is no one that you will find that cares more about any different type of pain that you might have than the team at LaBoardTherapy.com. Book today. Once again, that's LaBoardTherapy.com, or you can visit one of their five locations all throughout the Lafayette region.
PHL Nation, it's time to lock in and get serious really quickly with our friends at Fortified Gulf Coast and Fortified Gulf. This is my buddy Ramey. He is one of many Fortified Gulf Coast inspection professionals that are doing something to help you not only save your home, but your memories.
The Fortified program got started about 13 years ago. We adopted it here in New Orleans about 2.5 years ago. It's a more advanced way of doing the roof. It adds an extra layer of protection, whereas even if a hurricane was to pull the shingles off this roof, water will still not get into the house.
So yes, your establishment is important, but what about the things you can't replace? That family scrapbook or that painting that's been handed down from Meemaw to Papaw and to you? It is important to protect that today with Fortified Roofing. And while this seems like a priceless asset, did you know it can actually save you on your homeowner's insurance up to 37% if you are in South Louisiana? Just call the number 504-444-7563. That's 504-444-7563, or visit fortifiedgolf.com. That's FORTIFIEDGULF.com. Let's go. All righty, Preston Guy, you guys know PG77 on Twitter. If you're not following him, tweets out a lot of strong opinions, but also just the facts. Your biggest takeaway from Brian Kelly's press conference on Monday was what?
Interesting question there. Because it was, I found it was mostly a lot of coach speak, you know? So you kind of have to read in between the lines, and what I'm reading in between the lines is that Nuss is their guy, and they're going to go with him. Also reading into the fact that he did come out and say that Nussmeier was limited at practice this week, where he was throwing with a towel, whatever the heck that means. I guess that means you're stretching out your core, but you're not actually throwing the ball. You're just get a little resistance on your core there. And my question is, Carter, and let me ask you this question here. What is the purpose in limiting your starting quarterback and not letting him throw at practice if he is indeed 100% healthy?
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. And
it doesn't.
What I think people are starting to get mad about in particular isn't necessarily that the offense is struggling. That's just blatantly obvious. But the messaging here has been interesting. Because I would say for a good bit of Brian Kelly's tenure at press conferences, he's been pretty honest. He's been bold. But this has just been something, right? Is he injured? Is he not injured?
Right.
It's been a roller coaster. And I think a lot of LSU fans just want some not necessarily honesty, but just some clarity on what exactly is going on.
Yeah, and I think that's why people are frustrated, because I think if you're watching the film, if you know how healthy quarterbacks throw the ball, what they look like, that's not what Nussmeier's looked like. In fact, I tweeted out a video a couple weeks ago that, you know, actually popped off for a couple million views, where you're looking at him throwing the ball deep last year versus throwing the ball deep this year, and it's night and day. He's not pushing forward with that front foot. And he just, the fact that you combine that his technique looks awful and the fact that he's not able to throw the ball more than 15 yards when he had a gun last year, he was slinging it all over the place. And combine this with the fact that his decision-making hasn't been great. But I would argue that a lot of times his decision-making has been bad. That's been consistent. He's a gunslinger. He's that Brett Favre mentality. And a lot of times the ability to just launch that sucker and have talented receivers. Yes, this is it, has saved him. You see, yeah, it's kind of hard to see the video with the slow load, but you can see that front foot, and it slows down for you here. Watch this front foot. You see how it comes back, and it's like he's swinging his whole shoulders forward to create extra momentum. That to me looks like, in my opinion, an abdominal lower oblique injury. And I'm not a medical expert. I'm just guessing here based off of what I know about players, but you generate a lot of that throwing power with your lower oblique, just launching it in there. And you see, that's a healthy looking throw there. And of course you slowing it down did miracles for seeing that here. But then you see this next one and look at this. You
do it on
his foot jumps backwards. And that to me I think that muscle is tight or pulled, and whether he's injured or hurting, because there's a big difference between being injured and hurt. And I think he's just hurting. He's in pain. That looks like it's painful to do to me. Not a medical expert, just my guess, just what I think. Maybe I'm dead wrong, but they did openly say he's been dealing with an ab injury. And that was after I looked at this and said, boy, that looks a lot like an ab injury. They had called it a torso injury up to that point. And then lo and behold, Brian Kelly comes out and says he's dealing with an ab injury, but he's it's over. He's done with it. That's you know, and it just didn't look like it was done a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. Here's my problem is, you know, being I've done film analysis for years now, quarterback mechanics are very difficult to evaluate.
Yeah.
I, I was live when like I saw that throw, and I was like, okay, that's the most awkward throwing motion I've ever seen from a quarterback who mechanically is pretty sound when he's throwing against air. And I do think one underrated thing that happened to Garrett in that game, and this is to me my flag plant. There is nothing that hurts a quarterback's performance more than taking a huge shot early in the game. And I think Garrett took the biggest shot he has taken this year on the first drive of the game, where Tyree Adams got beat to the inside. And that was, if you want to get really technical, and I did a video on Patreon, it could have been targeting. If you go back and actually look at the hit, it was helmet to helmet, and I thought we were supposed to protect our QBs. If you breathe on them, it should be a flag. So, you know, it's going to be important to protect Garrett, because now, Preston, you got a guy who will be shaking Roger Goodell's hand 2 years from now, in Dylan Stewart coming into Tiger Stadium on Saturday night.
That's right. And I think you need to adjust from. So the good news about keeping Nussmeier healthy is at least you have an elite offensive line protecting him.
I was trying to keep it as steady as I can, but
no, the offensive line's been brutal. I think you need to adjust for Dylan Stewart. That's the way I specifically addressed it on my show last night. Very carefully chose the word adjust, because you're not just going to just contain him. You're going to need to adjust protections to limit that guy. I don't know that there's any guy on your offensive line, if you stick them one-on-one on an island with Dylan Stewart, if they're keeping Nussmeier's jersey clean.
You know, I'm going to get very spiritual here for a second. So I've been praying a whole heck of a lot for a lot of different things in my life. I've been praying for Kyren, praying for these players, praying for LSU, and all of it, because there's just all these swings of emotion. I was like, you know, who do I want to have on the channel tonight? Oh, Preston Guy. PG is my favorite, one of my favorite philosophical LSU football people out there. Here's what's funny. This just hit me. I feel like the Holy Spirit just smacked me. I know one of the chaplains, Brother Floyd, used to be a part of his Bible study when I was at LSU. Floyd Prescott. I think he's still doing stuff with the team. But you know, it's funny. The last time you were on here, we randomly, if I remember correctly, we randomly talked about Josh Jurasik, right?
South Carolina.
Yes. Okay. So this is what I think Brian Kelly should do. You should call Josh Jurasik. Okay. Look at how this lines up. Look at how this lines up. All right. Now, the Jeremy Hill breakout game in 2012. Okay.
Right.
We all know the real MVP of that game was number 68, Josh Jurasik. And Josh is a friend of mine. So I'm super biased about this. We're not close, but we lived in the same apartment, whatever. And for those that don't know, Josh Jurasik, on basically 3 days' notice, they're like, hey, you're going to play left tackle versus the best defensive end we may have ever seen in college football, in Jadeveon Clowney. And he pitched a shutout. He was amazing in that game. So maybe the LSU offensive tackles going up against Dylan Stewart, okay, once again, five-star.
Yeah.
A lot of people consider him generational, can't miss top 10 NFL draft pick.
Sure.
Preston, maybe we get that magical offensive tackle performance. Maybe it happens.
That's one of the things. Football is a funny sport sometimes. And sometimes what looks like the biggest mismatch in the world, it turns into magic. You know, maybe you can find some seventh year senior offensive lineman who has two fake knees because he's blown both his ACLs, who has never played a single snap of exterior offensive line, and he just locks up the number one draft pick at left tackle. Maybe that's the calling card here for LSU. Maybe that's been Brad Davis's strategy all along. Maybe, just wait until you're in the biggest pinch possible, and then a miracle comes up.
The only guy I could even think of on the team would, I guess, Bo Bordelon could be that, maybe. But I wouldn't do that. I don't know if I'd do that. But yeah, I hope Weston Davis comes out and does what he needs to do. You know, for me, Preston, I when I went back and rewatched the Ole Miss game from the defensive side of things, yes, the actual counting numbers were fine, knowing how many snaps they played.
86,
but I was
yeah.
I was very concerned about the third down conversion. So what was your takeaway from the defensive performance versus Trinidad Chambliss?
Yeah, so first off, Trinidad Chambliss is certainly a dude, very athletic, yeah. Can make a lot of throws. Obviously, his height, he messed up a few throws, got batted down, that kind of stuff. But, I mean, this is a Lane Kiffin offense, and you were on the field for 86 plays against it. Certainly, there were some things to be concerned about. And, by the way, another thing I'll point out, yes, they scored 24 points, but they did have two interceptions two turnovers on plays where they were driving. One of those fumbles was in the end zone. The other interception, they were moving the ball. So, you know, a little bit of that, you know, really were just well-timed turnovers that affected. So I do have a few concerns. I have a few concerns about running quarterbacks being able to run the ball. Of course, Lenore Sellers is going to be excellent at that, although he's only ran for 98 yards this year. I didn't realize that. Yeah, a little bit of that is injury. Then. Well, and yeah. Sacks. Yeah, sacks have really taken that aback, but I mean, still, we're talking about a guy who's going to be absolutely dynamic with his feet, and that does seem to be a weakness of the Blake Baker offense. That being said, I mean, you do have to ultimately look at the bottom line is Lane Kiffin offense that's going to hang probably 35 points or more per game this season, and you limit him to 24 with essentially zero assistance from your offense. You have no running game, no ability to hold on to the ball. You could not convert on third down, three and out machine, and you couldn't stretch the ball more than 15 yards. And that's what your defense was able to do for you. I have a lot of trouble pointing at the problems with the defense. I think the defense did everything you needed to do to win the game.
You would do what offensively versus South Carolina?
Yeah, I would try to stretch the field first and foremost, okay? Now, you're going to have a quarterback who can make that throw because as we saw the last few weeks, Nussmeier hasn't been able to make that throw. But what it does is it makes the defense respect that deep ball, right? Respect that they're going to stretch the field and get you going, and that maybe might help open up your running game. I don't think this is going to be an offense where you all of a sudden are running for a buck 50 a game, and that's opening up play action passes where receivers are just streaking wide open. No, I think the passing game is going to have to open your running game. Because you rank 121st in running game, and you cannot block a soul. You have one formation that's been very effective running the ball, and you've called that play once. I think you know which formation I'm talking about. You ran for 51 yards against Florida, and Jack Pyburn at fullback. But you refuse to put anything that resembles a power running game out there, right? So I think you have to be able to stretch the field. And my ultimate take with that is if this is what Nussmeier can give you, if Nussmeier can only give you what he gave you against Ole Miss, then you have to turn to someone else because that's not the capabilities of an SEC quarterback. And Nussmeier, if he's not capable of throwing the ball with arm strength, I'm sorry, he's just not the style quarterback that can deal with a 50% arm or whatever. He's not a great game manager. He's not a great decision maker. He's a guy going out there looking to make plays. And, you know, I think you have to be able to stretch the field and do that. And if he can't do it, I think you got to look to somebody else. We'll see. Maybe 2 weeks off is exactly what the doctor ordered. And if he is able to stretch the field, then that'll be my key is do that.
Yeah, I think one thing that really hurt Garrett, and it was a big strength of Jaden and Joe, was those two could play in a lot of different styles of games, right? If you need them to bring you back from a deficit, they can do it. So it's not just all the different things that they could do, but like you said, they could play the game manager type of game.
Sure.
Whereas you look at Garrett, last year, so many of the games – he had to come back from behind, okay? Mm-hmm. That's perfect because defenses are going to play you softer, and you're just going to – you need to sling it. You need to take chances. And now that you have a defense, you've got to not necessarily play more conservatively, but you also have to play not as recklessly, if you will. And I think Garrett really struggles with that. I think the Florida game interception was a good example of that where you know, last year, if you're losing by 10, that interception is somewhat more forgivable, but you're winning by 10 with your defense playing well. So some of it is hubris. Some of it is just thinking, hey, I could get this done.
And the Ole Miss interception was almost, I mean, in terms of the decision, I mean, he did short arm it, but there's a lot of guys in that area. If you don't have a ton of confidence in your arm, don't make that decision. And alternatively, his decisions in terms of when to take off has been awful too, by the way. He waits way too late to take off and scoot.
Steven's your biggest fan. many people think LSU should run more. I am a little shocked that and some of this is Garrett as well, checking in and out of it after, you know, some sleuthing, if you will. But, you know, I just don't think it's ever a good recipe when you run the football 9 times and a half and 4 of them are to a wide receiver and yeah. All the other running backs have 1 carry each. That just doesn't tell a good story.
Yeah. And a lot of your carries going to a guy who recently converted to running back as well, who doesn't have a long-term experience. He's been all over the place. So who's your true blue running back that you're looking to in these situations?
Yeah. So lucky enough, Caden will be back. I want to ask you a big picture SEC question. I have multiple teams in my elite tier right now. Yeah. I move Oklahoma out because of the Metier injury, but I do think there is a tier between Alabama, Georgia, Tennessee, Texas A&M, and then everybody else. Or do you think Ole Miss is ahead of any of those teams in your mind?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I think Ole Miss would have every chance to compete and beat those guys. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Would you say LSU for me, I put them, I A tiered those big schools. Ole Miss was my B tier and LSU for me is in the C tier in the SEC.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
It's about right. Yeah. If LSU gives you what you saw against Ole Miss, we're talking about an 8-4 team. Don't let that final score fool you. Ole Miss shellacked you, man. You got beat down by Ole Miss, and that they outgained you by 200 yards. Should have been a lot uglier than it was. But yeah, I look, I say that, and I'll preface this with this. I expect that the offense has hit a trough. You know, football is a game of ups and downs for most teams, and it seems like this offense has hit rock bottom, and it seems like there's only room to go up. And I do have a lot of faith that if you can just be a game management offense, just move the ball well enough, score 25 points. You know what I mean? Don't be a 3-and-out machine. Just give your defense a little bit of help and score enough points. I think this team can be elite, but right now with that offense, which is effectively putrid is how I rate the offense. Yeah. You're a C-tier SEC team right now.
This was how I had it for right now. It is weird. You know, I want to move Florida ahead of Texas here because they did just beat them. But this is how I see the SEC. I do think next week when we have so many SEC versus SEC games, you're going to get some real separation and a decent idea of what the playoff could be. I feel like this is a huge, huge, huge weekend in the conference. I want to ask you about Brian Kelly and the coaching job he has done. You can talk about the macro in terms of this is year 4 and we're having these mistakes. And you can also talk about actual when he's between these things right here on game days themselves. How would you assess that?
Well, Carter, what resources do you need to build a successful team? Money?
Yeah.
Continuity on your staff?
Yeah.
Time?
Yeah.
How about a strong recruiting foundation? Which of those resources has Brian Kelly not had?
Oh, he's had all those. I mean, check. Yeah, outside of going into last year where there was NIL, true disorganization, and it wasn't really a secret. We were all saying that, you know.
But it's a new era. Yeah, I get it. You get some time to adjust. You had $22 million to build a roster this year.
So, yeah, it's – and a lot of these transfers are actually good. Man, that's another thing as well.
Let me just rip this off. I'm going to try to give an abridged version. I kind of had a rant last week on Brian Kelly and the lack of excuses. And a lot of his tenure here has been, let's temper our expectations. He inherited a dumpster fire. We've heard 39 scholarship players more times.
I'm so tired of that.
You've been putrid on offense this year. You've played two Power Five teams. And those that you beat, right? And those teams haven't been good. They were 2-6 coming into the week. They both got wins, so now they're 4-6 now. But two of their wins were Long Island and Troy. You scored 17 and 13 points against those teams. You know, I mean, you struggled against a G5 team, Louisiana Tech. You stink on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, what does this offense do well, Carter? What name something this offense does well?
Quick screen game is decent, but everything else is.
Do you run either, block well?
They do not block
pass block. Best. Yeah, I mean, like no, you know no. what I mean. Are your running backs hitting holes effectively? Not really. Are you passing accurately? Are you managing turnovers well? You average turnover a game. You know what I mean? Are you passing deep, stretching the field? No. I mean, there's not much you're doing well on offense. And look, 2 years ago we saw the one of the worst defenses in LSU history, right? And you went and you fixed it, and now you've got an elite defense. But it's sad because it looks like this offense is essentially on pace to be one of the worst offenses we've seen in the modern era. I mean, this is an offense that if they don't improve, it's going to be right there with, you know, the Anthony Jennings era offense where they just cannot move the ball, and you're going to waste a really good defense, you know? So it's just, you know, I'm kind of done with the excuses for Brian Kelly at this point. It's been 4 years. Turn it around. Figure it out. You know, I mean, you've had chances to hire your coordinators. You've hired, you know, you're on your second wave of coordinators now. You know, I mean, it's just at a certain point, the buck has to stop somewhere. And this putrid offense, I mean, it's one of those things this long into his tenure, that starts with the head coach.
P-Guy77 is where you can follow him. And, you know, the Anthony Jennings era stuff has been brought up a few times to me. I do think this is worse because I knew at the end of the day I had number seven back there to
win. True freshman, yeah, but still.
Yeah, that is right. But, like, you still got vertical. I mean, Trayvon Dural was good.
You know what's wild? They went into Arkansas with Trayvon Dural, with Malachi Dupree, with Terrence McGee, Leonard Fournette, Darrell Williams, and a bunch of pretty solid offensive linemen. And they put up 0 points at putrid, what was it, 0-10 in the SEC Arkansas?
Go back and
ponder your, maybe that's why Les Miles isn't coaching football anymore.
Yeah, but I was at that that Houston opener versus Wisconsin when Wisconsin forgot that they had Melvin freaking Gordon in the second half of that game, and then the Trayvon Dural show happened and he dug us out of that hole. Preston, I appreciate your honest coverage. I think you're the best all-around person writing, podcasting, the whole shebang. P-Guy77, I do want to hold you to something because you did text me and said, hey, the next time you're in Baton Rouge, we're going to what's the name of the oyster house that supports
you? Oyster Bar. Yeah, Bay's Oyster Bar. Yeah, I'll get you a drink. What did I say? Was it a drink?
No, you said dinner on you.
Oh, dinner on me? That's fine.
Yeah. Okay. And then, or at least I read that. That's what I read.
Hold up. I have the text. Let's see what I said. Let's audit this.
Okay. Go on ahead.
Let's see here.
It's a big gap.
Was it in a group chat? Did I DM you?
No, it was a textile message.
Textile message. Let's see here.
Let's see. Yes. Okay, I have it right here. Thank you for coming on. I enjoyed it. I'll treat you to the Oyster Bar next time you're in BR.
There you go.
I
that offer still stands, but you have to actually. I'm not buying your plane ticket though. That's what I'm not doing.
I could race down there tomorrow. Ain't no drive for me, baby. Here's the thing, though. I'm my dad's son, and my dad, when he goes to an oyster bar, you know, where he resides, he does not get the oysters, so he goes ham.
Yeah.
I go ham when I have the opportunity to get oysters. I won't run it up on you, but
no, it's fine. It's fine. We'll take care of sponsors. Give me a tweet. Shout out my people. You know, PayPal. You know,
yeah, I do.
Show them some
I
love. You know what I'm saying?
What's the name of it again?
Bay's Oyster Bar.
Bay's.
Boy, they're getting a lot of free. They're getting some free ads tonight. I'd love to see that.
But
no, if you're an oyster lover, it's actually a really cool place to go because, like, they've got all the different types. Like, I didn't know there was, like, East Coast, West Coast, and Gulf Coast oysters, and they all have different flavors and tastes. I thought it was very fun. Yeah.
Because I go to all the oyster houses in Baton Rouge. I switch it up. And I've had them all.
Yeah.
But I've not had this place. And it's funny. Actually, I say I have them all. My cousin... One, I didn't know that they did this in Baton Rouge, or this could just be my memory fogging up here, but he won an oyster shucking competition. I didn't know if they, I don't know. and I still haven't had his oysters. He's really good at preparing them, but I am down. Bay's Oyster House.
You remember Jolie Poy, Jolie Pearl Oyster?
I've never had
Jolie Pearl. Okay, it's the old Jolie Pearl. That one's pretty well known.
It was a rebrand.
It was I mean, the guy bought the building and made it, you know, a new place. But yeah,
was it a Texas Tech rebrand or was it a real?
Was real. Like they built, like they actually have like a live stage for bands. They built. I mean, but, you know, I mean, I guess I don't know exactly. I don't even remember ever going to Jolie Pearl Oyster House, but I know Bay's is. It's really nice and new. It's really cool. Like we did our show there. Our national championship baseball show we did there.
Hell yeah. Let's go. Yeah.
You didn't know I talked baseball, did you, Carter?
Very rarely. Games.
I'm more of a baseball fan than a reporter. I'm not a baseball reporter. I'm just a fan of the team. And sometimes if I need to step in and fill in with extra content, I'm happy to do so.
Call me the Oyster Bay. I am down.
The Oyster Bay. All right. Well, hey, man, come on down. I'll treat you. No problem.
I'm a char-grilled guy. I don't like them raw. So.
Yeah, I like it raw. I mean, char-grilled's fine, but raw is where you really just get to test what quality of the meat is. You know what I mean? Like, there's nothing disguising it. But he has a lot of cool ones like barbecue, garlic parm. It's a bunch of crazy flavors. It's really good. We'll do a variety and we'll power rank them. That's what we'll do.
I'm down, man. Preston, thank you so much, and make sure you go support all his partners. And
we'll make the next show centered around another LSU football fix sponsor. We'll pick a new one each time we come on.
Oh, okay. So what you have? Celebrity theaters.
That's celebrity theaters. I got about eight of them. So I don't think we're gonna get them all.
You got eight? Yeah, guy, you are big time. I got about four. I ain't got eight of them. Thanks,
celebrity. Carter, I don't know how to put this, but I am very important, according to you. Not very many other people, but you will say I'm important.
We wouldn't be friends. I don't think we've ever met in person though.
You said that after the last show, and it actually blew my mind. Like, well, you know how like you back off, you're in the lobby, and you kind of hear the guy talking a little bit. You said never met Preston in person. I was like, is that? Oh yeah, no shit, that is true. How about that?
It's
crazy because I've known you for probably 5 years now. I guess we've talked, had each other's number, that kind of. You're in my fantasy league.
Well, I've been in the same press box as you. I would guess.
Yeah, that is true. Actually, we've been in the same press box. I found an old photo of you from 10 years ago with my coworkers. We're all sitting, and I was like, "Hey, that's Carter." And I didn't know who you were back then, but it's just kind of funny how that works. But yes, we'll have to connect sometime soon. That's what happens when you choose to move to places like Arkansas, you know.
And nothing wrong with Arkansas, baby.
Arkansas, they got their Kansas. We got to have our Kansas.
Right there's a lot of LSU season ticket holders.
Is there really?
Yeah, a lot. The LSU alumnus of the year lives like around the corner from my parents. He was the alumnus of the year like a few years ago. But yeah, there's three LSU season ticket holders in my parents' vicinity. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. But yeah, man, we'll talk soon, Preston. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, man. We'll talk soon.
PGuy77, go follow him. I share this. He's one of a few LSU reporters I have alerts turned on for when it comes to Twitter. The others is Wilson Alexander. Love Wilson. And then a recent guest, Jacques Doucet. So those are the only ones I have alerts on for, because you don't want someone that's just constantly flooding 1,000 tweets at one time, which is me. I tweet a bunch, or a fair amount. But Preston's my guy, man. He's my guy. Okay? Now, you made this up. This is not true. Free premium. I can't say that last word. Corn. This is obviously you being a bot, especially with that name. Next thing you know, someone's going to have like another corn pun in my chat here in a second. This comment brought to you by Brazzers. You said my brother is the fastest shucker in the world. They sent him to Italy for an oyster shucking competition. He works for Superior Seafood in New Orleans. This is the biggest lie. You've never commented on any of my stuff. And then you come in. What the hell? And you say they send him to Italy for a competition. That's not true. And you say, look him up, Jordan Gallet or Gallet. Well, Jordan, I don't believe you. Oh, he's good friends with Captain America. Yeah, I'm supposed to believe this. I'm supposed to believe this. That is the craziest username of all time. Free premium corn. How do you know it's premium? Different folks have different tastes. Like, how do you know it's what qualifies as premium? I mean, what is it? Like, is there an elite tier of this? I do not partake per se, but it's impossible to not open Twitter and see some shucking going on there. Let's go to Aaron. Speaking of, LSU will clap some cheeks this weekend. 35-7. Oh, now we have random C-Dove-225. Carter, he is telling the truth. You just fact-checked it. Okay. This is if you believe it, I have a spot at 7:30, so I have to go. Text your brother right now, and I'll put him on the channel right now. I'll put him on the channel right now in front of... There's 354 people according to this. It's wrong. It's probably like 200. There's 83 on YouTube, however many on Twitter or Facebook or whatever. I'm not big. Okay. Oh, Jace Max. I'm kidding. I knew that was an autocorrect. Well, I'd be dabbling in some sports betting this weekend. That's the thing. I don't have a sports betting partner. I guess FanDuel, DraftKings, Polymarket, they don't believe in me. I do have a small partnership with Fast Draft Fantasy. Go sign up using my promo code Carter. But I love sports betting. It could be that my picks have actually been really sharp. I have been really, really, really good this year picking the games. Now, my unit size has gone down because, well, life, but my goodness gracious, I've been on a heater. Gave you Georgia first half last week, clears. Told you to stay away from Mississippi State covering that big ass spread. I was right about that. Told you Florida outright versus Texas. Now he's got an Instagram and he's shucking. Yeah, Jerry, unit size. It goes on and on and on. A lot of y'all threw those puns in there. Mike says Acme Oyster House is the best. Phil's is good. That's my wife's place. My wife loves Phil's Oyster House. They do buffalo oysters. Those are probably my favorite oysters I've ever had in Baton Rouge. But I am down to try Bay's Oyster House. I'm down. Okay? I saw this. A past Tuesday guest, Max Toscano, said that Texas A&M quarterback Marcel Reed isn't really that good at all. He also tweeted out today that now is a good time to buy low on Arch Manning stock. Really? Does Arch really suck? I don't know. I didn't think about this. A Sprite can. All right, we'll take a few more here. Big thanks to our super chatters tonight, Mr. Blanche and Aaron. Don't forget to sign up for our Patreon, and we will have our first Patreon post. We do a lot of Patreon film study preview stuff. We'll have some LSU South Carolina film for some live streams later in the week. Look at this. Britt, man, we wouldn't be here without you, Britt. It's good to have you back. I need you here more often. I remember you really well, Britt. Put the QB under center and let the backs hit the A and B gaps with the head of steam. This O-line is not capable of blocking the draw, run, and RPO. Simplify it, fire off the ball, and smash. Yeah, so, you know, one thing I've seen throughout football is that reverses work for everyone. And our reverses have been really good this year with Berrion. And one reason as to why, like, reverses and jet sweeps and stuff like that work is even if you defend it well, what you are guaranteed is that the ball carrier will have more momentum than the guy tackling him. So to Britt's astute point, if you get under center, you're giving your running back a head of steam. You know, like that's why Leonard Fournette was so good. Did you really want to tackle that guy when he is like foot in the turf blasting downhill? I almost said coming downhill, but that would have continued the thread. Let's go to Tari. Carter, are we stacking the box and playing man coverage against USC? Okay. So what makes this matchup a little bit better for LSU is that Ole Miss's receivers have been really good. They have been really, really, really good. And that was a big question going into this year because they lost Jordan Watkins and they lost Trey Harris. And those were their, by far, two best receivers. And Ole Miss got really active in the transfer portal going to get receivers because they knew they were in a very tough spot. 11's come in and been great. 2's come in and been great. They got Caden Lee back in the slot, and he tore our asses up. And then they also have Stribling, number one, who's a good player. So their receivers were tougher to guard, and they just did not throw in Monsieur Delane's direction. The difference here is South Carolina has one of the weaker pass-catching groups in the SEC. So yes, we could play man coverage, lock up on the outside, but if you're going to do that, man coverage does open yourself up to far more lethal QB scrambles and runs. So if they're going to do it, we have to stay disciplined. We have to maintain our rush lane integrity. And if we don't do that, you better hope you have a spy taking care of Sellers. And something else you must do. And arguably the best defensive tackle outside of Aaron Donald of this era is Chris Jones. He gave up on a play last night. after Trevor Lawrence went down, he just gave up. He thought Trevor Lawrence was down, and he was able to get back up and run into the end zone. If Chris Jones had kept hustling, he would have brought him down. Or Trevor would have had to throw it out the back of the end zone. So the LSU defense is really good at this. They do play really hard. You have got to keep your foot on the gas pedal with a guy like Sellers. He is arguably the best tackle breaker at the quarterback position I have ever seen. Now, he's not a better runner than Jaden or Lamar or maybe even Cam Newton, but he is better at breaking tackles and actually harder to bring down when you actually get him. So be ready. Be ready. Now, I do want to address this, and I shared quite a few thoughts on this on Sunday. Kyron Lacy's dad did an interview with Matt Moscona, and I wasn't able to listen to it. And obviously, that interview is very important to the development of this case. Now, the Louisiana Police Department also released a video. I was able to watch it. And, you know, it is what it is. You know, Brian Kelly addressed it, and it's still a very emotionally charged story. And I cried a decent amount. And I wouldn't say I cried, but my eyes were tearing up. Jace Max watched it. A lot of you watched it. So I don't want to get too deep into the weeds about this story, but it is important to remain civil and open about a very sad, tragic story. But if you want my full thoughts on it, go back to the Sunday night stream. I have never lost as much sleep as I have with this story. I'm so distraught, so sad. I've shared, I don't have a close connection to the Lacy family, but there is someone in their orbit who I've talked to a fair amount over the past couple of years, got to talk to him briefly this weekend. And if you do believe in a metaphysical being, I'm a Christian. It doesn't matter which walk of life you come from. Just pray. Honestly, you could do, if you don't believe and you don't want to pray, that's fine as well. But this is very stressful, and it's also very stressful on the players. And this is, you know, way more stressful than, hey, this guy's been playing well or whatever. So my prayers go out to the Lacy family. The K2 Foundation link is in the description below if you want to donate. It's really, really, really sad. Like it's hit me pretty hard. Blasting downhill isn't that much better. But yeah, I haven't gotten a chance to listen to it. I do think it's very important for me to go listen to that before I comment on it any more than I did on Sunday night. Payments qualifies premium. Well, speaking of, the Patreon service is premium. Carter, is it going to be a lot of Harbor versus Pickett this weekend? Because I don't think they line him up versus Delane. Yeah, you know, as far as DJ is still going to play a lot, but I can tell you this, that the LSU coaching staff was very pleased with PJ Woodland, and it's outside of the interception. You know, this kid is insanely competitive. And, you know, I wouldn't consider this game a must-win game because it's not. I think LSU can still get in, and this was my preseason prediction. A 9-3 LSU team would get into the playoff. That's where I was. And I still think that's true. This is a very chaotic college football season. And one thing that I do think is really underrated in all of this is that Penn State lost to UCLA. And this is going to be my final thought. I think that loss is massive. I think it is massive for LSU's playoff chances and for any team's playoff chances in the SEC with three losses, because it's going to be near impossible with Penn State's schedule, for them to win out, have the non-conference schedule that they had, and still make the playoff. And that's a fringe team that is very flawed, not a good eye test team either, that I think with three losses, we would get in over Penn State with two losses. Now, then again, look at Penn State's schedule. They still do have some really good teams on the schedule. They play Ohio State and Indiana. All right. So if Penn State were to win out, yeah, they would probably get into the playoff. But if you were to compare it to LSU's schedule, it gets interesting. It gets very interesting. So, you know, I do think some of these other elite teams that could eat up a playoff spot, I think LSU gets in over some of these teams if they were to find a way to go 9-3. And obviously they are 5-1 right now. Yeah, Britt, get the play action game going. Tomorrow, I will talk a little bit more about the LSU run game, what I would do differently with LSU's run game. I do think one very underrated weakness, and I've taken some blowback for this because some of this, and we get a super here at the end. It's from Jared. Thank you so much. I think one weakness for LSU, and I think it's been underrated, it's been tied in. This is what I've always said in life, and I know it gets old, but you always have new viewers, and it's just one simple point. We had an idea that this LSU offensive line was going to be bad. I don't think we thought it was going to be this bad. It is atrocious. But we knew that. It was in the realm of possibility. The LSU tight end room, being what it is right now, is tough because we thought it was going to be good. This has not been smooth. There's been injuries. Obviously, the offensive line and the quarterback play does affect it. But I'm telling you right the frick now, in the NFL, I do NFL film studies every week. It is amazing how big the tight end position has become in the NFL. And the same could be said about college. I don't think it's as big of a deal in college as it is in the NFL. But the tight end is such a cheat code in how defenses play now. When you play so much split field, DBs playing off, tight ends really change the math when it comes to box counts, what you could do with a tight end, whether it be just simple routes or leaks or misdirections and all those different things. And the thing is, Mason could do all of it. There wasn't really anything that he couldn't do short of like breaking a bunch of tackles and really housing something. But there's been maybe five tight ends in college football that could really do that over the past 3 or 4 years. It's a problem. It's a problem. So hopefully Bauer Sharp plays better. Hopefully Tre'Davious Green plays better and is healthier. And I would seriously consider playing more Donovan Green in this next game. So there you go. We'll talk to you soon. I'll be on Blake's channel here in a few seconds. So go right on ahead and check him out, AYS Sports. And we will talk to you soon. It is Power Hour LSU. Boom. Shout out to Jared, King M, and Mr. Preston Guy. And shout out to all of our partners, Fortified Gulf Coast, our friends over at Labor Therapy Center and Zion Imaging in the 360 spin booth experience. Let's freaking go.